You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Capital Asset Advisory Services LLC, DBA CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor. Capital Asset Advisory Services LLC, CG Advisory Services, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of Capital Asset Advisory Services LLC, DBA CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor. Capital Asset Advisory Services LLC, CG Advisory Services, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, DBA, CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, DBA, CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, DBA, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, CG Advisory Services, and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
All righty, welcome aboard, everybody. Finally, a new edition of New Retirement Now with Prout Financial Design. Joining us today from Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, financial advisor and RICP, Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. It's great to be here. And I hope everybody enjoyed our long, long disclosure. We're working on it, though, to try to trim it down.
I think we're ready for a commercial break.
Nathan is in today. Nathan Prout. No, Dennis. Dennis is a on vacation, we hear, possibly.
Yeah, we allowed him to take one, so I'm in today for Dennis.
Nathan is a financial advisor and operations manager of Prout Financial Design, Deanne Jennings. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yes, indeed.
And we are talking Roth IRAs today. Heidi is leading off.
One of my favorite topics. So, but today is May 18th, and we're here in the studio. And then on Saturday, we have our replay at 9 a.m., I believe.
Yes, Saturday. We do.
So we're going to jump into our topic today is Roth IRAs. And I really like Roth IRAs. They offer a lot of great different features. And so one of the features that people may not realize is that the benefits of the Roth IRA can move on to your beneficiaries. So some of the benefits of Roth IRAs are tax-free earnings and tax-free distributions down the road. So the benefit to your beneficiaries inheriting a traditional IRA will have very different tax consequences than inheriting a Roth IRA. So converting an IRA to a Roth IRA can benefit your beneficiaries as well as yourself.
So quick question, hopefully it's not a spoiler, but if one inherits the Roth IRA, do they also not have taxes?
Right.
Is that right?
It's tax-free distributions for, to the beneficiaries.
For the holder and the beneficiary later.
Correct. And that can be, you can see how that could be a great gift, Ron, because, you know, all those years that you have money in a Roth IRA, then if it passed to the beneficiary, they can benefit from all of those earnings tax-free.
Tax-free.
For all those investment years. So now, beneficiaries of traditional IRAs, distributions are fully taxable. So that's the big difference between that traditional IRA and the Roth IRA. So distributions from inherited Roth IRAs paid to the beneficiaries are taken penalty-free and tax-free. So traditional IRAs, the distributions will be taxable to the beneficiaries in the year taken. So if you have a traditional or what we would call a regular IRA and you inherit that, you don't have any penalties for taking the money out, but you will be taxed as regular income on any distributions. So a couple years ago in 2020, we had the Secure Act that was passed. So most spousal, non-spousal beneficiaries can no longer stretch an IRA that they inherit. So previously, if you inherited a traditional or a Roth IRA before 2020 and you inherited that, you could stretch the distributions over your lifetime. But the Secure Act made that subject to a 10-year period. So sometimes you may have required minimum distributions and sometimes you may not. But depending on the size of the IRA, that can really impact your tax bill.
So if you inherited, let's say a big number,
$5 million, right.
You inherited that in a traditional IRA, you've got to take it out in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
In all at once or a little bit every year, but you take all of it out within 10 years and you're taxed on that.
Right.
If it's a Roth IRA, you still have to take it out within 10 years?
Correct.
Okay, but you're not taxed.
Right, but okay. You can just imagine how many tax brackets you would go up, even if you just divided by 10.
Okay.
And took out an equal amount every year. You can see that you would be paying a lot more in tax every year for the next 10 years.
So on the Roth IRA, so you're not taxed directly on that amount that you take out, but it does add to your personal income, so you're saying your income tax will go up?
Nope.
No, it won't. Okay.
Not with Roth, okay. Only with that traditional, so I probably crossed wires there. So let's talk about the Roth IRA beneficiaries. So if you are named as a beneficiary of a Roth IRA, tax year contributions and converted funds are always tax-free when paid to the beneficiary. Now, earnings will be tax-free if the five-year holding period that began with the deceased IRA owner's first Roth IRA contribution or conversion is met. So that is a mouthful and sort of hard to understand. But what they're saying, if the Roth has been open for more than 5 years, earnings can be withdrawn tax-free. So that five-year rule can still affect a beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So the earlier that you convert funds or you contribute to a Roth IRA and get that five-year rule out of the way, the better.
The better, yeah.
Okay.
That's such a big deal, I think. The tax-free part, obviously, it's a big deal. But think of it, you might inherit a Roth IRA, you might inherit that or inherit it when you're at the top tax level bracket, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it would just, if it was an IRA, it would just add more taxes.
Exactly.
Now, Heidi, are you saying as well that if you inherit a Roth IRA, you might have required minimum distributions on that as well, or no?
Well, on a Roth IRA, you would not have, there are certain circumstances, and we'll get into that, because, you know, there's always those exceptions with tax rules. So let's work our way through, and we'll address that. The first thing to know is that 10% penalty that you hear about being 59 and a half and taking money out of an IRA, there's a 10% penalty. That's only for the account owner. It's not for the beneficiary.
Wow.
So beneficiaries do not have that 10% penalty. You can take out any amount that you want for a distribution. All right. So with Nathan's question, let's sort of turn the conversation and talk a little bit more about the complexities of inheriting that Roth IRA. So traditional IRAs, owners of traditional IRAs, must start taking RMDs when they reach their required beginning date. And with all the recent legislation, that can either be 72, 70 and a half, or 73, all depending on what year you were born. So that's a whole other show if we want to go into exactly yeah. what number goes with which year you were born. However, Roth owners of Roth IRAs are never required to take lifetime RMDs from Roth IRAs. So we're talking about the original owner. They never have to take an RMD. So we just consider that they never have a required beginning date, that no matter what age they are, they have never reached their required beginning date. And that comes into working through some of the rules when you inherit. So let's talk about different beneficiaries. First, non-eligible beneficiaries must abide by the 10-year rule. So everybody may go, well, what's a non-eligible designated beneficiary? So the best way to define that is to tell you who it isn't, who are the eligible beneficiaries. And we've talked about that before on the show, but let's just go over that. That would be like a surviving spouse, minor children who are under the age of 21, disabled individuals, chronically ill individuals, and individuals who are not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner.
So if you designate someone as a beneficiary that doesn't meet any of those definitions, they're not eligible to...
They're not eligible for the stretch. So they are beneficiaries. They're just not eligible for some special rules or special treatment.
Okay.
So most people are non-eligible designated beneficiaries.
Most people are not. None. Most people are eligible.
Most people are non-eligible
really?
Beneficiaries. Well, like grown children, sisters and brothers, unless you're close in age.
Okay.
Friends, nieces, nephews, all those people would fall into that category of a non-eligible beneficiary. You have to be a spouse or all the ones that I listed to be eligible for special treatment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice and easy, straightforward, like all of our tax rules, right?
Which is another reason why you should seek out a financial professional. There's a lot of gray areas.
Right.
Yeah. It's so, like when they send you stuff in the mail by law, you know, they have to send you an explanation of maybe when your account, something's stock is sold and bought, and they send you that or... No, well, that's nice.
Prospectuses are
so they have to be
example.
Transparent yeah. and give you the information. Unfortunately, nobody understands it.
Yeah, and that is, I always tell clients, you know, if you want to get mail, open an investment account.
Right.
Because there are many, many disclosures and pamphlets and policies that they have to send in paper to the investor to yeah. make sure that they're well informed.
Don't they have something now, an option where you can say, okay, you know, I know you have to get this in my hands, but we're going to opt for you to just email it to us. Can
yeah.
you do that, or does it all still have to be hard copy paper?
That works on some of the disclosures, okay. but okay. it still doesn't work on all of the disclosures.
Okay.
So no matter what, you get mail.
You get mail.
You'll get mail.
All right.
But there are ways to, like, get statements or certain kinds of notices electronically, and you can just store them in your email files or something
yeah.
like that. All right. So let's jump back to our topic. We were talking about non-eligible beneficiaries. They have to abide by this 10-year payout rule. So that means that the entire inherited IRA account must be depleted by the end of the 10th year after the year of death. So if the original IRA owner died on or before his required beginning date, which refers to those RMDs or required minimum distributions, then the RMDs would also apply to the beneficiaries in years 1 through 9 of the 10-year rule. So we're talking about regular IRAs. The 10-year rule is the new rule. So the key is if the owner of the IRA was already taking RMDs, then the beneficiary has to continue to take RMDs. But if those RMDs, if they haven't started taking the RMDs, they just have to get the money out in 10 years and they can take it out any way they want. But with the Roth IRA, remember I said they are considered not to have a required beginning date, so they do not have to take RMDs as a beneficiary. So that's how you get to that answer. Sort of a long way to get there, but the benefit is there.
So what you're bringing up is a lot of advantages to the Roth IRA for the policyholder and for the beneficiaries. So people say, well, then why not just go with the Roth or convert? So are you seeing a lot of people that want to convert now, or is it easy to do? Is it costly to do? Can anybody convert and say, I'd rather have a Roth than a traditional because of all the nice things you're saying about Roth IRA?
Well, yes, but there's always reasons to do one or the other. It all depends, again, going through that individual filter to see what's going to work best for you. What if you've had an unexpected bump in your income? Maybe you got a bonus or you cashed in on an investment and you're really trying to stay within your tax bracket. Then that year it might benefit you to do a traditional because you get that reduction in your income for tax purposes with the traditional. When other years, if it's not going to make a difference to your tax bracket, you may go with the Roth option because of all the great benefits. Really, these retirement accounts have become strategy for you to manage some of your tax situations. So you know, some people are going to do a Roth just because that's what they want to pay the tax now and they want to have that tax-free income and they don't care how it affects their other tax brackets or how much it affects their income tax. But sometimes you're in a special situation where you can avoid a lot of tax by just doing some simple contributions or traditional contributions.
Are you limited as to how much you can put into an IRA?
Yes.
What's the annual? Because I'm saying, when you say tax advantage, so say your income goes up because you got a bonus, as you said. Mm-hmm. If you get a traditional IRA, what's the limit?
Okay, so a regular IRA that you open yourself, your limit if you're over 50 is $7,500. Okay, yeah. If you're under 50, it's $6,500. But you can also use your employer plans.
But I'm saying so you can only lower your tax bill by that much, can't you?
Right.
Right. Or lower your income by $7,500.
Lower the income by that much. But say you're in a 401k or 403b, the amount for people who are over 50, that's $30,000.
Okay.
And for people under 50, that's $22,500. If you're in a SEP IRA, the high limit is $61,000. So you can see by having multiple, if you have an IRA and you have an employer plan, you can add those two together to get a significant amount of money into a pre-tax and have that off of your income there.
I have to share a comment from one of our listeners regarding all the rules. It says, do we really think that elected members of Congress came up with all these rules? I'm thinking lobbyist. I'm a pretty smart guy, and I don't understand any of it. So, yeah, it's probably likely that whatever special interests go in there and court the lawmakers and come up with all these. And, well, let's say by 70 and a half, or by 59 and a half, or let's change it to 72, or if you got a four, you know, there's a lot of exceptions.
Yeah, I'm sure true that there are a lot of lobby groups. My understanding, a lot of times these bills are written by people in the legislature's offices and maybe people who aren't familiar with what the ramifications are of just putting in this line saying, you know, you have to take it out in 10 years without knowing what is that going to do to somebody's tax situation or some of the other ramifications from that decision.
Now that you bring that up, another message from a listener says, by requiring that 10-year full disbursement on inherited IRAs, the SECURE Act secured accelerated tax revenue for the IRS federal government, thus making the beneficiaries insecure. So what they're saying is they want you to take the money out faster so they can tax it and get it quicker.
Well, I would say that's probably
that's one of the one of the results
factors in the decision making process. Yeah. All right, so we were talking about the non-eligible designated beneficiaries. Let's talk about the eligible designated beneficiary. What happens to them when they inherit an IRA? And remember, who are these people? These are the surviving spouse, minor children, disabled individuals, chronically ill, and individuals not more than 10 years difference in age. So from the original account holder. So eligible designated beneficiary inherits a Roth IRA. They are permitted to use their own single life expectancy to leverage the full lifetime stretch of an inherited IRA. And when we say stretch, that means you don't have to take it out in 10 years. If you live 20 or 30 years, you can continue on having money in that Roth IRA. While there are no RMDs on an inherited Roth IRA, within the 10-year period, there are RMDs on an inherited Roth IRA if an eligible designated beneficiary elects the lifetime stretch. So when you inherit and you're an eligible designated beneficiary, you have to choose. I want to do the stretch where I take a RMD a little bit out every year and stretch it out, maybe being able to keep that account over decades, or do I want to just go with the 10 year? So you have a choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody else doesn't have a choice. They're stuck with that 10-year rule, but you have a choice between those two. So that's why they call them the eligible designated.
That's what I was going to ask, what the stretch means. So literally over decades, the stretch.
However long you live. You want.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. So you just take out that RMD each year, but if it's still making money and you you're making more than you're taking out, that account can even grow over mm-hmm. that time.
So no time limit on the stretch.
Exactly.
Nice.
So we're going to kick off with everybody's favorite topic. Nobody has any strong feelings about annuities, but we'll just talk about annuities a little bit here. So right off the bat, there are really three types of annuities. There are fixed annuities, which pay a set interest rate for the amount of time that you hold them. There are indexed annuities that are tied to an index and perform based on the underlying index that they're tied to. And then there's a variable annuity. We don't sell variable annuities. The article I'm referencing, the author does not recommend variable annuities, but depending on your situation, they could make sense. All that to say, we will really not be talking about variable annuities much today. So essentially, annuities are investment or savings vehicles that, like many investments, can be purchased either outside or inside an IRA. Just as you can put a mutual fund into an IRA, so can you hold an annuity in an IRA as well. They are not mutually exclusive.
And Nathan, there is some confusion on that. I know I get questions from clients thinking that they have to, if they have money in an IRA and they want an annuity, they think they have to take the money out of the IRA. But the IRA can hold, the IRA is the registration, and the annuity would be the asset, or the mutual fund would be an asset. So the registration can hold either kind of product, right?
That's correct, yeah. And just because annuities are allowable holdings for IRAs, it does not necessarily follow that they should be included. So the key question, as always, is whether it makes sense to put an annuity into an IRA. And the answer depends on why an IRA owner might want to do so. So one of the first possible reasons would be multiple choices. So again, like we talked, there's fixed annuities, indexed annuities, and variable annuities. But there's also deferred annuities and immediate annuities. So with the former, money is invested before the cash comes out. Alternatively, with an immediate annuity, investors make a lump sum payment in exchange for an income stream that will last for a certain period of time or even for their entire life. Both deferred and immediate annuities also can be diced into qualified or non-qualified annuities. So again, IRA or non-IRA money, money that you've already paid tax on. You could also do a non-qualified annuity. So taxing issues. So first up, if you have an IRA and you're thinking about an annuity just for tax deferral, it's probably not going to make sense for you to do so, because an IRA is also tax deferred by nature until you start taking withdrawals from it.
So it really has no impact.
Right. If that's your only reason.
Right.
Now, if you're looking at other advantages that an annuity might provide, such as a stable investment in a hypothetical volatile market or something like that, then it could make sense for you as well. So let's look at an example for a non-qualified annuity. So Bonnie has a $1 million non-qualified deferred annuity that generates $50,000 of interest in 1 year. As long as Bonnie leaves the interest inside the annuity, she will not receive an IRS Form 1099 for that interest income, and no taxes will be due. On the other hand, if Bonnie pays $1 million for a one-year CD that earns $50,000, she would owe tax on that $50,000 regardless of whether she withdrew the interest. With most other non-IRA investments that pay interest, such as corporate bonds, investors must pay the tax on the interest for the year that it is earned. Depending on the size of the account, this could create a hefty tax bill. The bottom line is that a deferred annuity is going to be used primarily for tax deferral. It does not make sense to put it into an IRA. Non-qualified annuities offer the same attractive tax deferral that a regular IRA offers you as well.
So Nathan, you're saying, like, if you have substantial assets that are not in a retirement account, mm-hmm. and you know, you have all this interest income or investment returns that could be driving up your tax bill, if you wanted to like push that off by putting it into the annuity, you don't have to claim any of the gains and pay tax on until you actually take that money out. So you can maybe lower some of that investment income.
That is correct. And when you do go to take withdrawals from that non-IRA annuity, the interest comes out first. But you can use a strategy of annuitizing that non-qualified annuity, which would spread out the earned interest evenly over that annuitization period. So again, like Heidi was saying, if you have a lot of earned income and you want to defer some of that, a non-qualified annuity could make sense, especially if you plan to annuitize it later down the road and set up a predictable income stream as part of your retirement portfolio.
That's good. And non-qualified is...
regular money.
Yeah, exactly.
Money that you've already had the pleasure of paying taxes
on. Not an IRA.
Oh, that's another way to say it.
So again, the payments that you receive from non-qualified immediate annuities, for instance, will be taxed pro rata. Only the interest earned will be subject to income tax, while the other cash flow will be an untaxed return of after-tax contributions.
Well, we can call that the basis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Right.
Yep. So such tax treatment is better than the taxation of withdrawals from a deferred annuity. So another example, Dave purchased a deferred annuity 15 years ago with $500,000, and its value has grown to $1 million. Good job, Dave. If Dave starts taking withdrawals, the $500,000 of interest earned comes out first and will be fully taxable as ordinary income each year until he has withdrawn all of the interest.
Hmm.
On the other hand, if you were to annuitize that deferred annuity like we were just talking about, the same as purchasing an immediate annuity, essentially setting up that predictable payment for a set number of years that has gained value, only a portion of your periodic payments would be subject to pro rata income tax, because some of the annuitized contract consisted of after-tax dollars and some consisted of tax-deferred dollars. Thus, annuitizing a non-qualified deferred annuity may result in a significant tax savings. Keep in mind that you are holding a non-qualified annuity, You cannot just transfer to an IRA. If Bonnie, from our first example, has, say, $1 million of after-tax dollars that she wishes to transfer to an annuity, she cannot make the annuity an IRA annuity. Doing so would result in an excess IRA contribution, resulting in severe penalties if not timely corrected.
So that would be a bad thing.
Yeah, don't do that. Thus, if you decide to purchase an annuity with after-tax dollars, it must be a non-qualified annuity. As explained, there may be some tax advantages to investing after-tax dollars in a non-qualified annuity. On the other hand, when you have pre-tax dollars in a traditional IRA, you will pay tax on 100% of the withdrawals, no matter what investments are in the IRA, including an annuity. So consequently, if an annuity will be purchased primarily for tax benefits, again, it does not make sense to put it into an IRA.
Because it just doesn't do anything, because everything you take out of an IRA is taxable income, whether it's in an annuity or anything else. So.
Yeah. So online, for instance, there are many articles that warn against putting an annuity into an IRA. Generally, these articles assert that both annuities and IRAs offer tax deferral. Putting an annuity into an IRA loses the benefit of tax deferral because withdrawals will be fully taxed according to these articles, so an IRA annuity is a poor choice. But the error embedded in such articles is the assumption that the primary benefit of an IRA annuity is tax deferral. This is absolutely false because annuities may have many positive characteristics besides tax deferral. Among today's annuities, some may offer a benefit that guarantees an increase in value regardless of market performance. Other annuities guarantee that you will receive a competitive fixed interest rate for several years or even longer. Still, other annuities allow investors to participate in potential stock market gains without any downside risk. So again, like we talked about at the beginning, that would be a fixed indexed annuity. So it offers protection from any market downside. And if you have market appreciation potential, it's not going to follow that up directly, but it will still follow it up. Mm-hmm. So you're not risking any of your money, theoretically, with something like that, depending, of course, on the claims paying ability of the underlying insurer.
So like taking it, so we said there's no advantage to like the tax situation because they're both deferred products. But it's the features, these other features that can make an annuity an attractive investment for your IRA, because maybe you want to have that downside protection. So if the market goes down, that your principal does not, or the guaranteed income, or some of the other ones that you mentioned, some of those can be very attractive and worthwhile looking at with your IRA money.
Yeah, and even as the author wraps up this article too, he talks about purchasing with an IRA annuity, a guaranteed income rider, how in a lot of scenarios that could make sense. Now, a rider on an annuity will add a fee to it. But again, with these fixed annuities or fixed indexed annuities, your all-in fee is usually in that 1% to 2% range. Another reason for the variable annuities that they can get a little tricky, your all-in fee for them, especially with the underlying investment portfolio, can start pushing 4%, 5%, or 6% a year, often diminishing your total return potential and making the annuity company as much money off your investment as you end up making yourself.
And another thing I like is with a guaranteed income stream, if you are RMD age and you're taking that income out of your annuity, those income payments go towards meeting your RMD, and sometimes your guaranteed income is higher than your RMD, so maybe it can cover the RMD for maybe another outside IRA that's invested in something else.
Yep, and some of those products with those income riders also offer potentially increasing guaranteed income, and so they'll lock in that base rate, and then if the underlying index performs well, you can even have income that potentially increases to help offset the cost of inflation as well.
And talking about guaranteed income, like say you're not eligible for life insurance because of pre-existing conditions, would this be an option?
Yeah, you could look at guaranteed income, but also there are annuities with guaranteed death benefits that might grow at a set percentage a year or grow to a certain amount, again, guaranteed in like 10 or 15 years. And those can be a really nice part of the portfolio as well without all the typical regular insurance costs. And there's no underwriting requirements to get an annuity like that. So,
Nathan, is are annuities your specialty area?
Yeah, so yeah. I started at Prout in December of 2014, and I quickly switched to insurance at Prout in, mid-2015. And then I got my life and health designation, I believe it was 2017. I'm going back a few years here. But yeah, I've been helping with fixed indexed annuities, regular annuities. Like I said, we don't sell variable annuities, but we still service them if you have one in your existing portfolio, and then as well as life insurance. So, you know, annuities too, if you think about it, and at the 10,000 foot view, they're a way for insurance companies to balance their books a little bit, because you have your life insurance that you're worried about in case you die early. And then you can almost think of your annuity as the other side of that book of, I'm worried I might live outlive my money. So that's why you might look at some of those products with a guaranteed income rider, or you know, depending on your scenario, of course.
So a lot of alternatives and options, and everybody's an individual. So before, I would say good advice. I can't give advice, but I would say, before you invest in an annuity or talk to somebody like
Nathan. Oh, you
like
definitely want to talk to a professional, a financial advisor, or some other insurance professional so that you can understand. Because there's a lot of rules, like there are with IRAs and everything else, and you want to keep yourself out of trouble, and you want to buy or invest in something like that for the right reasons for your circumstance.
Exactly. Righto.
Claims are rising less than a week after the U.S. unemployment rate fell to a generation or even multi-generational low of 3.4%. Initial jobless claims to the U.S. surged to the highest level since October 2021. Since their low of 182,000 last September, initial claims have increased by 82,000, and that source is Bespoke. Timber, after surging 545% from April 2020 lows to May 2021 highs, lumber future prices have plummeted 80% and are now 25% below pre-COVID prices seen in February 2020. The sharp drop in this key input for home builders is one reason why the S&P 1500 Home Builder Group is up 44% over the last year and less than 2% from all-time highs, and that source is Bespoke. Can you believe that? Timber surge 545%.
I know.
That's amazing.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
But it dropped 80%.
So.
Is that just a return to normalcy, or
what? Yeah. I said below normal.
Below. Yeah.
The interest rate rising slowed down new home building.
Yeah, absolutely. Berkshire Appleway. Berkshire Hathaway held its annual meeting in Omaha on May 6th and 7th. Among Berkshire's roughly $300 billion in public equity holdings, Apple makes up 38%.
Wow.
Berkshire's $116 billion stake in Apple is larger than the market caps of all but 64 stocks in the S&P 500, and that source is Bespoke.
That's an incredible crazy stat.
Apple Berkshire.
It should be. Nearly half of all Americans do not have a retirement account, and are relying on Social Security is not going to cut it. While the average monthly Social Security check is of a retired worker is $1,800, the average household headed by an American over the age of 65 spends over $4,000 per month, and that source is thehill.com.
There's a bit of a gap there.
There is a gap, so you need to get with your financial advisor and plan for your future, because Social Security alone is not going to cut it.
I wonder if the message from people in federal government, politicians, whomever, they always say, the other guys want to cut your Social Security. Whenever they talk about it, they should responsibly point out that it's a crucial part of our retirement plans, but not something you should rely on solely. I mean, they should put a plug in there. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Let people know.
In the New York Fed's April survey of consumer expectations, a net 19% of respondents reported their financial situation was worse versus better now than it was a year ago. While still negative, that's up 18 percentage points from the low reading of 37% in June 2022. And that source is New York Fed. Yeah, so economy is lumber's down.
But a bright spot.
Exactly. Let's focus on that. We can go out and build houses or something. I don't know. But with interest rates, maybe not. So we have upcoming Lunch and Learns at Prout Financial Design in our brand new building. We have a learning center, which we are super excited about. And as you all know, Dennis, Heidi, and Nathan have a passion for educating people in the area of finances. And so we have these Lunch and Learns. They're the third Wednesday of every month from 12 to 1 p.m. The first one is June 21st on Social Security. The second one is July 19th, the ABCs of RMDs and QCDs. We like our
We love acronyms.
Yes, acronyms and letters. And the third one is August 16th, avoiding 60-day rollover mistakes. So if you would like to come to this Lunch and Learns, we'd love to invite you. And please call Beth at 231-947-3992. Or feel free to sign up at proutfinancialdesign.com, which leads me to our website now is up and running. So feel free to check that out. We were working on it for a few weeks. And also our radio shows are up to date for the most part, and podcasts are up, so we should have everything up and going. You can look at our radio show on the website or get the podcast app, and it's New Retirement Radio with Dennis Prout. So check it out.
For those Lunch and Learns, you definitely want to call the office and reserve a spot.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Call the office and reserve.
Do you bring your own lunch, or do you guys have something available? How does the lunch part work?
Good question.
Yeah, we'll have a light lunch available.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, like sandwich.
So, yeah.
Sandwiches.
Sure.
Yeah, and we'll keep it to an hour, too. But, that's of course, right. If you'd also like to come in and see us about anything we talked today, or just in general for financial advice, our number is 231-947-3992, and we would love to see you.
With the Lunch and Learns now, that's every
month.
Month, okay. Mm-hmm. Starting with June 21st.
July 19th and August 16th.
So will you also, you used to do a couple times of the year, Dennis would do a retirement planning class at NMC. Mm-hmm. Will you still do something similar to that now in your building?
Well, we're still considering options on that, but we definitely have the capacity now to do it at our own learning center. So we'll have to see how that works out. We haven't gotten that planned yet. Yep. So.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Our thanks to Nathan Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings. Once again, thank you all.